The state of Illinois has an 86% recidivism rate for youth. Not for adult, but for youth, which means 86% of the 100 kids that we touch would have gone back into prison. That is horrific, and we should be ashamed of that because it doesn't have to happen. Our recidivism rate in 3 years with graduates is 3%, and in 2017, it's zero.
Well, welcome to Crazy Good Turns. This is Frank Blake. I'll be your host, and we have a really exciting episode today. As you know, Crazy Good Turns, what we do is we try to highlight and celebrate and recognize people who do crazy good things for other people. And we have three folks on the podcast today. First, Susan Garcia Treishman, who is the executive director of Kurt's Cafe. You're going to be hearing a lot about Kurt's Cafe. It's a restaurant that employs young adults living in at-risk situations, and it improves their outcomes through work and life skills training. And we have Rick Planos, who is a volunteer at Kurt's Cafe. We're featuring Kurt's Cafe as an episode because Rick, who's a listener to Crazy Good Turns, suggested that we ought to be interviewing Susan and ought to be talking about the great things that she's doing for at-risk youth in the Chicago area. And then we also have on Bev Backel. Bev does not have anything directly to do with Kurt's Cafe, but she's been a longtime listener and participant in Crazy Good Turns, and we thought it would be fun to have a guest interviewer participate in the episode. And so as we get into this, I'll turn to Bev and ask about herself and then give her an opportunity to ask a question or two to Susan and Rick. So with that, let me start and welcome Susan and Rick, and thank you for the amazing things you're doing for kids in the Chicago area. And start, Susan, with just maybe you could give a description of Kurt's Cafe and what prompted you to start it.
Kurt's Cafe started 6 years ago, and I started it because I realized that there were too many young adults, mostly black and brown young adults, 15 to 24-year-olds, that were being incarcerated for things that were pretty much out of their hands. Also, I noticed that there were a lot of young women that were making choices that many of us were looking upon, thinking that they were choices of ignorance, and I found out that they were actually one of two bad choices that they could make. They have very few choices in their world. So Kurt's Cafe opened with the concept that it's an open cafe. People can come in. They can meet the young people that live in their community that they have often disregarded as not worth their time and energy. And we teach job skills, which is, you know, making cappuccinos and lattes and sandwiches and salads and customer service and the register, all that kind of good stuff. And then we also teach life skills. We have full-time social workers at both of our cafes, and we teach things like anger management and financial literacy, table etiquette. We go on field trips. We went to the Holocaust Museum yesterday with 15 youth, and we just give them opportunities to learn things that they didn't have the privilege of learning when they were growing up. We work with a small amount of kids every year so that we can graduate them successfully, help them get their GEDs, get back into school, or get a job.
And how do you find the people who you bring into your program?
They generally find us. So at first, we went to social workers, and there's an organization in Evanston that's awesome called the Moran Center. They do legal advocacy for youth. We went to them. We went to the city of Evanston, and they sent us the youth that they knew fit our model. So our model is not designed for at-risk youth. It's designed for the highest at-risk youth. And so they sent us our first group, and we kind of tweaked the model, although our program was initially written by my son and I, but then it was radically changed by a lot of young men that were coming out of prison. The first group really helped us form exactly what the program needed to be for them to be successful, and then we were able to open a second location from their guidance 3 years after that.
Wow. And how long do they typically spend working in the cafe and in the program?
We call them all students or interns, and they're usually in the program for about 3 months full time. But half of that time is doing the work skills, half is doing life skills. So it's kind of an interesting, crazy day, if you will. We work with no federal funding. So if the students need to stay for 4 months or 5 months or a year, that's how long they'll stay. The program's for them. If they're not ready to be launched, they don't launch. So we make rules based on their needs as opposed to based on what funding we get.
And Susan, just to double back on yourself, tell a little bit about yourself and how you got into the food service industry and how you decided that this might be a good vehicle for helping the highly at-risk youth.
Well, I've been in the food service industry since I was 13. So I started waitressing, and I've been a cook, and I've been a chef, and I've been a bus girl and a dishwasher, and I've done everything but hostess, actually. I love the industry. I wasn't really academic, so the industry was a little better for me because I used my mind and my body more than having to open a book and do work that way. I know that it's a place that a lot of people can excel, and I know that it's a welcoming community as well. Also, when I was doing my research, it is one of the highest income-bearing industries. So we're everywhere. We're in churches, and we're in hotels, and we're in airplanes, and we're in hospitals. It's a good place to get yourself started. So I started because I was raised in a family of six kids, and my mother was widowed when I was only seven, and she was pregnant with my little sister at the time. And so we all had to kind of start working early to help with the funding of the family needs. And restaurants were, you know, an easy mark for me. At 13, my mom was waitressing there as well, so she got me the job. When I was 25, I opened a food service company with my sister, Nance, and my brother-in-law, Kurt, and we each threw in $100 and opened a catering company. We had a van, too, so we were very fancy. We just started catering out of our kitchen at home, our apartments that we rented, and we built it to a very large industry, and I realized I was good at it. I loved it. I'm passionate about food. If this was a TV show, you'd see what I mean. I just love it, so it's easy for me to teach what I love. And then working with the youth, because they had absolutely positively no skill sets whatsoever, that was not something that was taught to them when they were growing up in an underserved community, I just thought, one, they needed to eat. So if I taught them food service, they could always get a job there, and then they could eat all the time. They're very food insecure. But also, I'm not a teacher, so I couldn't, like, put on the face and pretend English was fun or math was exciting. But I can excite food. So I knew with my passion, the only thing I could teach them was food service.
One of my observations, having worked in retail, is people underestimate the importance of showing up on time. And I'm curious whether you see that with the youth you're working with, that just providing that structure of here's when you show up, here's how long you work, whether that's a big part of the process for them.
Yeah, well, I think that that's actually what I've learned is that that's actually a process that you learned somewhere. I learned from my mother because my mother always worked when we were growing up. And a lot of people have not had the privilege of learning that. It's a learned skill like anything else. So our students will often say, and I say it jokingly, but it's not funny really, but it is kind of, when you show them the schedule for the first time, they'll say, oh, do I get to choose? And it's like, no, honey. You show up all the days I put under your name and you show up on time. So there's a process to teach why showing up is important. And in most jobs, if you don't show up, you get fired. At Kurtz, when you're a student, if you don't show up enough times, then you're put in a circle with other students in the program, and maybe me. For the first 2 years, it was me. And I would sit and we would talk about who was affected by them not showing up. So it's not show up because the man or the woman tells you to show up. You know what? If you didn't show up, you affected this dude who had to set up the whole line, and you affected me because I couldn't service the customers the way I needed to, and now they're all mad at me, and you affected my husband because now I'm going to go home and yell at him at the end of the day. So, you know, we talk about the consequences of that one little decision not showing up on time, and it really makes a difference. But it's a learning process. You know, everything that we do there, we teach. And even like when Rick volunteers, it's not like this is how you make a latte. It's more this is how you don't get really frustrated when you just screwed up the last seven lattes and the customer's now upset. It's how do you deal with that anger right on the line? And everything is a learning lesson at Kurtz for us as volunteers and workers as well as the students and the customers.
You raised Rick, and Rick is on the line, and Rick, you volunteer at the cafe. How did you first hear about it, and what made you want to get involved?
Well, like you, Frank, I've got a background in retail, and a big part of my career has been teaching in retail. 10 years ago, I went back to school to get a master's degree to teach career paths and create career paths for people that were not college bound, because retail, like food service, is one of those industries. But I literally live a block and a half away from Kurtz. And so I'd walked by it several times. I didn't know much about it. And a friend invited me to meet him there for a cup of coffee. And we started talking about it. And next thing I knew, I was volunteering.
Oh, that's fantastic. And what's the most rewarding part of volunteering at the cafe?
I would say, as a parent of two successful children, you realize how lucky you are. And so being able to give back at this stage of my career is important to me. And so instead of teaching in a classroom, I teach there, I teach at work, I teach at other volunteer opportunities. But it's a chance to give back and be part of something. I mean, it's also a great place to go because the food's so much better than every other national chain. So I love that too.
That's terrific. That's terrific. So, Susan, is there a specific person or a memory that you recall as being pivotal to your decision to launch Kurtz Cafe?
There was definitely a situation. So I sold my business after my business partner, Kurt, passed away, and I sold it to my sister. So I was still at an arm's length involved, but I was trying to find what was going to be my next career path. I was working in a retirement community because I love teenagers and I love old people. And I was working in the community, but I was still doing restorative justice peace circles in our community as well. I did my whole shift, and then I ran over to this circle, and these three young boys were going to be incarcerated. They're going to go to prison for 3 to 5 for aggressive graffiti art. And it was very aggressive graffiti art. It was very good art, though. And they were going to be, like, sent away, and they were 15.
Aggressive meaning foul language or threatening language?
No, actually. It was just too much. It was on a school, so that's one ding. They did write the word perp over the door, but they didn't know what a perpetrator was. They had a different acronym for it, which was really cute. It had something to do with art. I can't remember what it was right now, but it was really, it was so cute when they finally told us. But we could only reveal that information in this circle because they don't ask you those things in court. They just assume you meant perpetrator. And then they aggressively painted a white car as well. So it was the dollar amount. You can go to prison for a certain dollar amount of vandalism. And that's what they got dinged for, plus the hate crime thing for the perp that really didn't mean perpetrator. But they were the most innocent, lovely young men, and their mothers were there in the circle. And we started, you know, unwrapping their story. And it had nothing to do with being badass kids. It had nothing to do with trying to get back at anybody. It had nothing to do with being perpetrators. It had everything to do with the fact that they consider themselves artists, and they were. We had just taken away the art wall in Evanston, and they were angry. They thought they tagged this white car because the man was African-American and they were Latino. They tagged it because it was a really good canvas. It was clean, and it was like an SUV. And they targeted the school because it was big. It had nothing to do with everything that our community had wrapped its head around, saying that they're bad kids and they're going to hurt people. So once we were able to unpack that a little bit, the principal actually came into the circle and he looked at these three boys and a classic sentence, he said, "This isn't you." And they all are looking at him and he said, "You boys wouldn't do this. This isn't like who you are." And so he brought them back to the core of the beautiful young men they were. And the man whose car they painted said, "You know, I thought you were tagging me specifically." And they shared the story that it wasn't that at all. And so rather than putting them in prison, what we did was they had to teach a graffiti art class at the school, and they had to paint the church of the family's car who they tagged because their church needed painting and it had a lot of old people in it. So we just turned this really bad situation into a good situation. And that particular day, it reminded me how many youth we were incarcerating without hearing their stories or really listening with our hearts what had happened to them. That was my pivotal point. I'd already written the business plan, but no one would pick it up and run with it because people have given up on teenagers. And so I decided literally that day that I was going to try it.
What a powerful story. And Bev, this would be a great time for you if you've got a question for Susan or Rick. And again, thank you very much for doing your own crazy good turn and being willing to participate as an interviewer in this.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I've been a longtime listener and always think of Crazy Good Turns as my favorite on-the-go motivational pick-me-up podcast. So I really appreciate being able to listen to it.
Maybe tell a minute or so about yourself, Bev, before the question.
Sure. I'm a Minneapolis freelance writer, and I love writing stories about people who use their own experiences to advocate for causes they care about. And so Crazy Good Turns has been just a delight in that regard. I feel like every episode is an opportunity to personally witness somebody who's had an experience and use that experience to make a difference in the lives of others.
Wow, that's a perfect fit between what we're doing on the podcast and what you do. That's interesting. I didn't realize that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's part of why I'm so enthusiastic about the podcast and try to do what I can to promote the stories, because I do feel like they really, I think they also go to people's hearts and inspire all of us to maybe look at the stranger we pass on the street a little bit differently, maybe to make a little bit of an effort to drop a card in the mail to somebody who might be lonely. So I appreciate all the inspiration I receive from listening.
Well said. So do you have a question for Susan or Rick?
Yeah, sure. I have a couple. So Susan, I was wondering, I'm a lifelong goal getter and I'm always inspired by other people's goals and often am interested in their specific goals as well as what might drive them. You mentioned a little bit about how you grew up and some of the things that have informed your opinions and point of view in life. But what are some goals you have that are on your horizon right now?
Oh, that is so tough. I've never been asked that before. I'm going to go with a really strong, I don't know. I will probably wait until the youth lead me into something different. I believe that the work I'm doing isn't quite done, so I'm not ready to hand it off to anyone. But I believe that there are so many needs in this particular demographic. I do love working with the young men and the young women. It's interesting. One of the things that you said is how much, you know, you learn and grow from all this kind of stuff. And it's amazing when people recognize me for opening the cafe, which I'm, of course, so appreciative of. But I feel so terribly guilty because from day one, first student, Chris, I have learned more. I've grown more. I've become more of the person I was meant to be in the most incredible aggressive way in the last 6 years than I had done in the previous 54 years. They taught me what I was capable of. They taught me how fear can hold you back and how fear can make you grow. And they've taught me strength. It's unbelievable what I get out of this program. So it's like super selfish for me to be sitting here talking when it's really the young people that are so amazing and our community as well, because they have embraced them rather than turning their back on them. But I think for my next thing, one of the things I'd really love to do is in Minneapolis, you guys have an amazing restorative justice program there. It's awesome. It was one of the starting points. You do great work. And I think there's a lot of other communities doing really awesome work, specifically with youth. But I think we all need to get on the same page. We need to stop starting new things maybe and just move really good things forward. I would love to figure out how to be able to go into different communities, learn what they're doing, and report on best practices. This is a unique demographic, and if I had followed what I thought, our program would have been a disaster, but because I followed what the youth wanted, it's very successful, and I'd love to be able to share that information with other organizations. That's a big dream, though.
One of the results I'm most impressed by is the impact Kurtz Cafe is having on recidivism rates. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the state of Illinois has an 86% recidivism rate for youth, not for adult, but for youth, which means 86% of the 100 kids that we touch would have gone back into prison. That is horrific, and we should be ashamed of that because it doesn't have to happen. Our recidivism rate in 3 years with graduates is 3%, and in 2017, it's zero. Rick's giving me the high five on that one. They work hard.
Your recidivism rate is
3%? Yeah.
And the average is 86% for the state?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That shows what the kids are capable of. But what happens, I believe, in our society is you get people like me. I'm a middle class, older white woman, and I think I know the answers. And so I open a program that's pretty nifty in my head. And it doesn't work. And so we go back to, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, 86% of these kids are bad kids. They got to go back in prison. As opposed to, I ignorantly opened up my business plan to young people that I chose to serve. And they told me the plan stunk and they would fix it if I wanted, and they fixed it. So I gave them exactly what they want. And then it's really successful. So I think some of us need to get our ego out of the way and move aside and let the voices be heard of those we serve. That's why our recidivism rate's so good. And the kids work wicked hard. They don't want to go to prison. That's not their choice.
Let me jump in and ask, what were some of the things that you had to revise based on the input from the students?
I had to pay them. So I thought that I was being so kind to offer this program and offer to feed them once a day and, you know, all this kind of good stuff. And they were like, you're just one more white woman that you think can save us, and you're not. So if we are working for you, we want to get paid. So they get paid a very small stipend, but they get paid. I said one meal a day. They said three. So they get three. I had more academic studies for them, although they do have to be in a GED program if they're in our program and they haven't graduated high school. But they wanted things like anger management, and they wanted financial literacy, and they wanted other things outside the world of mine. Like I call them my minivan series. So everything I taught my kids, safe sex is one of them, while they were stuck in the minivan with me. So they wanted more of that. Those are all by their lead. And when we're not hitting point with a certain group, we ask them what they want, and then we give them that. So right now we have a really good meditation program because the young people are still burying too many of their friends, and they don't know how to calm down from that. So we have a sensei that comes in and does meditation with the young men once a week. The young girls are more aggressive with their work, but they have seemed to excel with art therapy. So one of their classes once a week is art therapy by their choice. They do really well telling their story through that art. It's things like that as opposed to English, math, and science. It's what they want to learn.
Your comment about being able to take what you've learned and share it with others who want to make a positive impact rather than everybody inventing the wheel on their own is such a great comment. One of the things I would hope is sharing positive stories is people do realize there's a lot to learn rather than starting from scratch all over the country.
And learning from those that we choose to serve or we choose to walk with is important.
Right. What are some of your favorite success stories that have come out of the cafe so far?
There's so many, to tell you the truth. Well, just today. There's always a today. I got a call from our vice president of operations, and she said that our chef really wanted to go to court to represent a kid who had, I don't know what he did. That's not my part, the part of my job, but apparently it was bad enough and he's black enough that we decided we're going to incarcerate him for a very long time for something he did 4 years ago. And he's been working with us for a year now. We have him on staff. And so our chef really wanted to go and represent him in court. He couldn't go because we got a big order in the cafe. 2 seconds later, one of our graduate students came in and said, you know, I was just in the neighborhood. I wanted to show you all my new car, and I just wanted to help out on the line. And the chef says, is there any way you can run the kitchen for me for 2 hours? He said, for you, I'll do anything. So the kid who stepped up, he was a really troubled kid. And I think we worked with him for like 6 months in the cafe. And he's just doing awesome. And he didn't like come in to show off his car. He came in to share the joy that he was able to buy a car, to thank us, and then to volunteer. That's not stories you hear on the street when we incarcerate young people. You know, the hand back. Also, this young man who's going to court today, a young guy came into the kitchen to get some help and food. He was homeless, and he had children in the car. And he said he hadn't been able to afford diapers or food or place to stay. And the young man in our program, who I know has no money because he is a child of his own, went to his car and got a pack of diapers that he had bought for his daughter and gave him the pack of diapers. Those are not stories you hear. And these kids are so filled with empathy. It's just we only see the choices that they have to make. I'm telling you, it's only the best of two bad choices. You know, they don't get a third choice. The young ladies, too, I could tell you a million stories. All the students are amazing.
And Rick, as a volunteer, are there stories of the students that have impacted you as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like picking your favorite kid, you know. But right. Like Susan said, you know, I'm a lifelong learner too. And there's no doubt in my mind that I've learned as much as I've taught there. And that's the incredible thing. You know, it keeps you on your toes. I was working on a project for something else, and one of the kids was a very accomplished gamer, and he gave me the tutorial on video games that I knew nothing about, and I learned from him. So I think that's the thing that's amazing about it is they do have so many things to give. And as you get older, I think you get wiser about the fact that sometimes it's a lot more about listening and a lot less about talking.
Rick, I was wondering if you could paint a picture of the physical environment for Kurt's Cafe. I always like being able to picture people in the environment that they're in. And if we were to walk into Kurt's Cafe on a busy afternoon, what would we see, hear, and smell? What kinds of things are taking place? Who's there?
My favorite smell is the scones as they're coming out of the oven. But it is like a funky chic, I guess you'd call it. There's always a rotating art exhibit of some kind. Some of it's done by the students. Some of it's rotating artists. It's very comfortable. It's like your hand-me-down furniture. But the food and the drinks are phenomenal. I mean, one of the other volunteers schooled me about teas and how many different types of tea and how, where it comes from. And she'd been to China and I learned all about tea. I've been drinking tea my whole life, but the food is outstanding. And I think that's why we have a really successful catering business on top of just the cafe. But it's that place you go to, you know, sit in a comfy chair and have a warm cappuccino and talk to your friend. And there's a very regular clientele. Most of the clientele at the one that I work at are fairly affluent. They want to spend their money someplace where it's going to a good cause. But there are people that you see every single week that come back because they know their purchase is not only going to taste good, but it's also going to help do good things. You know, there's a private room you can have an event if you want, and there's events all the time. There's a very eclectic menu that's always enticing, and there's tremendously good stuff that's made right in the back room.
That's awesome. Susan, you've opened two, correct?
Correct.
And you've got a third on the drawing board, is that right?
We do, yeah. We're 65% funded for the third, so we're working on that other 35%, and we'll work with Lake County students. So in Evanston, which our first two cafes are in, we have a 95% graduation rate at our high school. In Lake County, the two schools that we'll target have a 75% graduation rate. So there's going to be a lot of students. I hope we find a big space that we can afford. Because we want to make sure that the students are served correctly. So we're unlike other restaurants where we have to have a private room for our social workers because most of our students are trauma, PTSD. So we have private one-on-one counseling. We bring therapists in and stuff like that. So we need a little bigger space, but we're going to find it because these kids need it. I wanted to share a story also with customers. So my little sister has a disabled daughter. And so she lives in the kind of the disabled parent world. And this one woman was telling her that her daughter had been in the hospital for 8 months in Evanston. She basically lived in the hospital as well. So she'd be there every morning until late at night and back and forth. And her daughter had some really touch and go moments for those 8 months. And Patty said, you know, how did you get through it? You know, what was like your saving grace? And she said, well, I just went to this cafe every day and had my coffee and sat and read and just chilled. And my little sister was like, oh, that's great. And right around the corner, there's actually a cafe that I go to a lot, which is run by French nuns. So my sister just assumed it was that. And Patty said, what's the name of it? And she said, Kurt's Cafe. She said, it's funky. You know, there's a lot of kids all around. A lot of people don't know what we do. They just think our service is a little bit different. And she was funky, and everyone was so happy, and it was joyful, and it was safe. And so we help the community as much as the community helps us to do our work.
That is terrific. And if someone wanted to find out more about Kurt's Cafe or wanted to help you with your third restaurant, where should they go to find out more?
www.kurtscafe.org, and Kurt's is spelled with a C. And Bev, to your point, also on the website under the About Us tab, there's a little video made by an organization called Small Forces, which is awesome. And I thought they were going to capture the stories and all that kind of stuff. They captured like this, the space. They captured all those questions that you were asking that Rick so articulately shared. It's just, it goes off the minute the young man opens the door to the cafe. You kind of feel like you're in a cool space.
And for anyone who's interested in learning more about your story, Susan, the TED Talk video that's on the Kurtz Cafe website is also really insightful. So I would recommend that to people if you're interested in learning more about Susan's background.
Thank you.
So, Susan, was there anybody in this process that gave you advice that, you know, is still kicking around in your head, or someone you particularly learned from?
Oh, definitely. Everyone gave me advice except my family, who's always been supportive. And there was advice was, don't do it. The kids will never get on the right path. I mortgaged my house for my husband's and my house to do it, which is a really bad business decision. Everyone counseled me not to do it and why not to do it. And they were all really, really good reasons. I'm a businesswoman. I read financials all the time. And they were all right on that front. But this woman, Lori Dube, I met her at the high school when I was doing something there, and she was doing something there, and I told her what I was thinking, and she was a local gal, and she said, it sounds interesting. Let's meet for coffee. And coffee led to opening day, and opening day led to 2 years of just holding one another up. And she didn't have any experience in the business world, but she had compassion, and she had intelligence, and she had goodwill, and she had strength. And so she held me up in times that were really tough, and she taught me a lot about myself and what I was capable of during those two years. And she was with us for 4 years, and then she moved to New York, but she's still in our zone and in our space and in my heart.
This is such a great discussion with you, Susan, and with Rick and Bev. Thank you for your questions. This is just a phenomenal, crazy good turn, and I think, Susan, you expressed it best in terms of, at least from my perspective, talking about how this helped you become the person you're meant to be. And I do think that people find that when they give so generously to other people as you've done. So thank you very much for appearing on the podcast. Thank you, Rick, for suggesting this as an episode. It was great. And thank you, Bev, for participating.
Thank you, Frank, for doing the work you do. We appreciate it. We have to share good stories.
We have to share good stories.
Yes, especially of ex-retailers.
There you go. Very good. Thanks so much.